Chapter 19. He couldn't get over the wonder of it. This great and fascinating organization established here in the very heart of a ruthless civilization, a civilization that had, in a few brief weeks, stripped him of everything he possessed. With a deliberate will, he stopped that glowing flow of thought. A frown wrinkled his solidly built face. He said, "The judge." Vera hesitated over the name, frowned again in annoyance with himself, then went on. "The judge said that to reestablish myself, I would have to..." "Before we go into that," said the old man, "I want you to examine the blue folder you brought with you." "Folder?" Vera echoed blankly. It took him a long moment to remember that he had picked up a folder from the table in room 474. He studied the list of company names with a gathering puzzlement, noting that the name Automatic Atomic Motor Repair Shops was well down among the A's, and the Fifth Interplanetary Bank only one of several great banks included. Vera looked up finally. "I don't understand," he said. "Are these the companies you have had to act against?" The silver-haired man smiled grimly, shook his head. "That is not what I mean. These firms constitute only a fraction of the 8 million companies that are constantly in our books." He smiled again, humorlessly. "These companies all know that because of us, their profits on paper bear no relation to their assets. What they don't know is what the difference really is, and as we want a general improvement in business morals, not merely more skillful scheming to outwit us, we prefer them to remain in ignorance." He paused, and this time he gave Farah a searching look, said at last, "The unique feature of the companies on this particular list is that they are every one wholly owned by Empress Isher." He finished swiftly, "In view of your past opinions on that subject, I do not expect you to believe me." Farah stood quite still. He did believe it with unquestioning conviction, completely, finally. The amazing, the unforgivable thing was that all his life he had watched the march of ruined men into the oblivion of poverty and disgrace, and blamed them. Farah groaned. "I've been like a madman," he said. "Everything the Empress and her officials did was right. No friendship, no personal relationship could survive with me that did not include belief in things as they were. I suppose if I started to talk against the Empress, I would receive equally short shrift." "Under no circumstances," said the old man, "must you say anything against Her Majesty. The weapon shops will not countenance any such words, and will give no further aid to anyone who is so indiscreet. The Empress is personally not as responsible as might appear. Like you, she is to some extent adrift on the tide of our civilization. But I will not enlarge upon our policy. The worst period of our relations with the Imperial power was reached some 40 years ago, when every person who was discovered receiving aid from us was murdered in some fashion. You may be surprised to learn that your father-in-law was among those assassinated at that time."
"Creel's father!" gasped Farah. "But..."
He stopped. There was such a rush of blood to his head that for a moment he could hardly see. "But," he managed at last,
"it was reported that he ran away with another woman."
"They always spread a story of some kind," the old man said, and Farah was silent. The other went on. "We finally put a stop to their murders by killing the 3 men from the top down, excluding the royal family, who gave the order for the particular execution involved. But we do not again want that kind of bloody murder, nor are we interested in any criticism of our toleration of so much that is evil. It is important to understand that we do not interfere in the mainstream of human existence. We right wrongs. We act as a barrier between the people and their more ruthless exploiters. Generally speaking, we help only honest men. That is not to say that we do not give assistance to the less scrupulous, but only to the extent of selling them guns, which is a very great aid indeed, and which is one of the reasons why the government is relying almost exclusively for its power on an economic chicanery. In the 4,000 years since the brilliant genius Walter S. Delaney invented the vibration process that made the weapon shops possible and laid down the first principles of weapon shop political philosophy, we have watched the tide of government swing backward and forward between democracy under a limited monarchy to complete tyranny. And we have discovered one thing. People always have the kind of government they want. When they want change, they must change it. As always, we shall remain an incorruptible core, and I mean that literally. We have a psychological machine that never lies about a man's character.
I repeat, an incorruptible core of human idealism, devoted to relieving the ills that arise inevitably under any form of government. But now, your problem. It is very simple, really. You must fight, as all men have fought since the beginning of time, for what they valued, for their just rights. As you know, the automatic atomic repair people removed all your machinery and tools within an hour of foreclosing on your shop. This material was taken to Ferd, and then shipped to a great warehouse on the coast. We recovered it, and with our special means of transportation have now replaced the machines in your shop. You will accordingly go there and...
Farah listened with a gathering grimness to the instructions, nodded finally, his jaw clamped tight.
You can count on me, he said curtly. I've been a stubborn man in my time, and though I've changed sides, I haven't changed that.